Welcome to the Exhaust Notes podcast.
I don't know what to do with my hands. Like, I just realized, like, I was about to do like a sneaker history intro. Now I'm like, wow, okay. Exhaust Notes Formula One podcast, your new favorite Formula One podcast, your favorite Formula One podcaster's favorite Formula One podcast. My name's Nick Engvall. I'm with my guys, Roa and Todd. Talk about some craziness in Formula One that we haven't talked about yet. And we have been on a little bit of a hiatus. I'm gonna jump out in front of these guys and say, like, I've been going through some life things for the past couple of months, and
all of us
prioritize this.
All of us, no. Yeah. Number one priority as always is us and our respective families. I think the listeners are aware of that. And as Todd is furiously drafting what I think is his last will and rights, I'll continue to just kind of glance. Yeah, see, listener, clack 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 clack. Clack, clack. I think I hear him coming. Oh, wait, that's the
wait,
other guy.
Are you going to have AI write that for you, Todd? No.
Please do it. Too soon.
So the listeners don't know that in the pre-show, we were talking about a lot of AI stuff and tried to get some hot takes from AI. And while you guys were doing the intro, I was trying to get some hot takes from AI because why not?
But you know what? Instead of doing our traditional hot takes, let's just show the world the dangers of AI and say our hot takes episode this year, whenever it is, and at this rate, it might be before Abu Dhabi, will be exclusively AI takes only. So then we can really revel in how bad they are. Because I don't know about you, Todd, my hottest take from my co-pilot was Haas to score a podium, which feels the right amount of hot takey. But everything else is so blasé and meh. So I'm hoping you got better hot takes. What did you get?
Well, Ferrari will completely implode in the second half of the season is kind of a hot take, but like also very plausible. The hottest take that I got back was a rookie or surprise driver will win multiple races.
Well, that's interesting.
Multiple races. That's a hot take.
I do like that. Okay, so here's the interesting thing. Hot takes, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that we've had the two hottest takes in Formula One in the last, like, decade happen in the last week or so, 2 weeks maybe. And I don't think any of us would have actually had these as hot takes, right? So we're going to talk about, obviously, Christian Horner getting the boot from Red Bull. But Nico Hülkenberg getting points, getting a podium. Not points, a podium. I don't think any of the three of us or any kind of AI would have ever predicted those two things.
I believe he was 750-1 odds for Nico Hülkenberg to make the podium before the race.
That's crazy.
Like, that was an actual betting line?
That was the actual betting line, I believe. Shit. I forgot which British-based betting company made that. But I thought that was really something that they were able to at least kind of come clean with it. And they said about 27 people took that. So I'm wondering, are there like lifelong Hülkenberg bettors that are just like, this is the time?
Like, honestly, that's put $10 on him every race for the rest of the season.
Well, if you bet $1 every race that Hulk was going to make the podium and you made $750 off of your dollar bet this last week, you're still up 500 some dollars, right? 239 races. So you're in pretty good shape if that's your bet.
And if that is your bet, I would suggest you go into Copilot and say, I want to set up a long-term investment plan around this $529 I've accumulated.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but I think everybody was like, I feel now more so than ever, we get these moments that few and far between are truly sport-affirming moments in terms of it doesn't matter what your allegiances are. You were just rooting for this one thing to happen, and Nico getting a podium was that. I think the most delicious part of it was for a brief second, he was competing with everyone's second favorite driver, Lance Stroll, for the podium. And I just wonder what would have happened if somehow Lance had gotten the podium over him. I think we would have seen a mass exodus of fans just for be like, you know what, I don't want to watch for like the next three races because this is ridiculous.
I picture Todd just flipping tables at home, breaking windows,
just breaking the TV.
I imagine you making a Steve Buscemi list from Billy Madison where it's Lance Stroll, Papa Stroll, you clean a gun, and then you put a lipstick on your mouth, and then the likes of Nick or I text you, and then you're like, you know what, that wasn't too bad. But then you cross our name off the list because you've been so driven to derangement because of Lance Stroll winning this hypothetical podium.
Well, he's had podiums, right? That was like the biggest travesty about this whole situation is like Nico's always been a quick driver. He's always been like quick over one lap and, you know, had decent paces in the races, but he just never was in a situation with a car that like could really put him on the podium. Maybe those like 2 years at Alpine, kind of the end, or when Danny Ric went in there, he was still.
Renault?
Sorry, yes, Renault.
Renault?
The black and yellow cars. That was like his best chance probably to get podiums those two seasons, but like he never really has been there. And he's had over the course of his career, like maybe 3 to 5 solid chances of getting a podium.
There was the infamous race from Mercedes. Was that the British? Which Grand Prix was it when they all dressed up in like Lederhosen? And
oh, that was Germany. Yeah. That was Hockenheim 2016, 2017.
No,
it was like 2019, 2020, I think.
The two most memorable Nico Hülkenberg moments, unfortunately, have been captured in Drive to Survive. The first was him in Austin at what is now, I imagine, the Zune of brick and mortar stores, the Microsoft store, where they did that. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, but essentially it whittled down to some plucky 10-year-old asking him, like, hey, how come you haven't won anything? And he just looks so defeated. And I was like, there's a certain amount of misery that happens if that would have happened at an Apple store, but because it happened at a Microsoft store, it's even sadder. Now I just want him to go back to Austin, camp out at whatever that store is now, because I guarantee you it's not a Microsoft store, and just wait for that probably 18-year-old now and be like, who's the loser now? Who's the loser now?
Oh my God, that would be... If their social media team pulled off something like that in Austin, epic. Like, absolute, I'm a Sauber, I mean, I'm not going to say steak, but I'm a Sauber fan forever in that moment, if they could pull that off, right? It's like,
even like media hire team a kid.
Is really good.
Just hire a kid.
Yeah. The kid resembles the kid that's like a little more grown up, and him just like face pushing him or something out of the way. Like, who's the loser now? Yeah. Just amazing. That's free game. That's free game, Sauber. You hear that? Free game.
Yeah, seriously.
Just get us a ticket to Austin if that does happen. We need to be in the the extras in that viral moment.
Yeah, exactly. I do think like what you said about, you know, sport affirming, right? Like it's pretty rare that we get moments in most sports that are like, hey, this is something we all agree needs to happen, regardless of who you're cheering for, regardless of who your team is. But those moments are so poignant and powerful that, like, you know, to be able to witness that, you know, it's kind of like one of those moments where you're like, it, you know, I think Todd and I have had lots of, as people who have watched Formula One for 20, 30 years, whatever it's been, you have your ups and downs. You have your moments where you're like, yeah, I don't care anymore. I'm not watching this weekend. Like, you know, kind of moments. But then you see those moments where like something that shouldn't have happened. Some anomaly happens where it's like, this is why you watch. And this is why you can never really, you know, predict that so-and-so is going to win every race, or this team is always going to be dominant, because there's always these moments of like the universe writing it for the people that it's been screwing over somehow. And I feel like that's like, for me, is like watching that was just like, God, I just can't wait to watch the rest of the season. Like, I can't wait for the new regs for next year. Like, I'm just excited about the sport again, because you have this moment of like somebody who generally is loved by most of the guys in the paddock, most of the people in the paddock, getting that, you know, finally getting over that hurdle. And yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, and like for it to happen in the way that it did also just like made it that much better. It wasn't like a crazy, like, you know, I mean, it was a wet race, but like it wasn't because, like, you know, Bottas like locked up and took out half the field and he happened to sneak by into third, and like the rest of the race was like Ocon's win, basically, right? That, like,
okay, there's no need for personal.
It's not shots at Ratatouille. It's just like, that race, like, he did the drive after, but like
he did the drive after, but yep,
he was there on pace and good strategy, and it was a really good race with everything else that was going on. But like, he fought that on merit, basically, and like it just made it that much better. And then all of the events after, like seeing his little girl go crazy watching from home,
and not only That was great. But I feel like the groundwork for this race win actually occurred 2 weeks prior when his little girl, the aforementioned adorable, I don't even know what her name is. She looks like an Antoinette. So I'm going to go Antoinette Hulkenberg doing the driver grid introduction for all of them. I don't know if you guys saw this.
I didn't see that. Oh, man.
Okay. Well, you know what? Because this is a sports affirming moment, I'm sure we'll give Nick the link and he can put this in the episode description. But yeah. Mrs. Hulkenberg is interviewing daughter Hulkenberg at the start of the race. And she just gives her the old, okay, the driver's first name is Oscar. And then the adorable child goes, Piastri. And then she just goes through the entire grid. And it is really funny for me to watch her say certain names with a joie de vivre that only like 4-year-old girls can have when they try to make everybody realize they're the cutest, most adorable thing in the world. As what do you think, Todd? Is Coco at that level yet?
No, she's a demon. She's the succubus.
Okay, fair enough. Takes after her father, I see.
I won't even get into that right now, but she's ruining my life slowly. But like, other things that happened, like they didn't have any champagne at stake because they didn't expect to be on the podium. So Aston Martin and Mercedes like had it prepared and they took it over so they could like they could all celebrate and stuff like that.
What do you think they had? Do you think they had like warm milk? Like what?
No, I mean I'm sure they had all their usual accoutrements, but they just didn't bring champagne because they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna get 18th and 20th."
That's amazing though. Those are stories that I love hearing, and seeing is like where like the teams are just like, you know, the camaraderie that you don't. We watch Drive to Survive and we're like, everybody hates everybody and blah blah blah, but like, you know that all these people are friends because they literally work together for 11 months out of the year. They travel the world together. There's probably, yes, bad blood at times,
like,
but generally speaking, you know, we'll get into the Christian Horner stuff, but like, you've seen Christian Horner sitting down eating with literally every freaking team owner, principal, driver, always, right? And they don't show that aspect of the sport, but like, you go to the racetrack here at Laguna Seca and these guys are out there trying to beat each other, but they're celebrating together after the race, you know, like that's the part of Formula One being the spectacle nowadays that you don't see, where before I think you saw a little bit more into that because it was like, hey, we all survived, we didn't die this weekend while we were out there, you know. But okay, so I just saw this, and I'm gonna just jump into it. The 10 longest waits for a podium in F1 history. Starting at number 10, Felipe Massa, 57 starts. So for those that weren't fans back in the day, early mid-2000s, Felipe Massa was like Sauber, and then he was with Ferrari behind Michael Schumacher. So long time, right? 57 races. So that's like roughly three seasons back then. Gianni Morbidelli, 60 starts. No,
that's like 5 seasons back then. They only had 12 to 14
races. Oh, yeah, that's actually true. Yeah, it's probably 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Gianni Morbidelli, 60. Esteban Ocon, 66 starts. Johnny Herbert, 67 starts. I actually watched him a lot in American Le Mans racing for Audi. Pedro de la Rosa, 67 starts. Jenson Button, who you wouldn't think took that long considering he's like such a face of Formula One now as a broadcaster, 68 starts for him. Mika Salo, 73 starts. Martin Brundle, another announcer, 91 starts. Carlos Sainz, 101 starts.
Wow.
And Nico Hülkenberg, 239. So, like, Nico Hülkenberg waited, like, 6 or 7 years longer. Like, just the fact that, like, we're so hard on all these young drivers nowadays anyway, just as fans. But, like, it's so difficult to stay in Formula One as long as he's been in Formula One now. It's even more amazing that he has been able to stay in Formula One, you know, maybe had some ups and downs there. But, like, you're talking about like, even if it's all in the last 6-7 years, you're talking about 6 or 7 years longer than Carlos Sainz. Like, he has been waiting so freaking long to get on the podium. It kind of is mind boggling because you can barely think of drivers that last in the sport for 6 or 7 years at this point. You know,
think about this. Hey, Rick, I always got to shoehorn him in at every episode.
Right? Shoehorn him in?
Chewy horned him in. He was in He was in Formula One for 13 years, basically. And he did a total of 258 races. Has been...
Jesus.
Basically, I know that Hulk has had like a season out or a couple of seasons out and a half season in there. But he's been in basically the same amount of time. And he's at 239 before he got a podium. That's how long. Like, I just wanted to put some scale on how long Hulk's been in the game. And he finally just got his first podium. So that's what just makes it that much more special, right? Everybody knew he had the talent. He's a good guy. Like, he's fun. He's engaging, like, whatever. But that's just how crazy it is, how hard it is to get onto the podium.
Yeah, insane.
It's insane. But you know what's equally as insane in a good way is the amount of racers on the grid and off the grid that paid him his plaudits on Instagram. Like, you see the likes of ex-teammates like Carlos Sainz or Danny Rick saying, you know, he's always been a top five driver to me. But even the young guys, Piastri, Lando, like, nobody seemed to be a bitter Betty about it. And that's what is probably going to feel just as important as the win, is the fact that he now has this tangible proof of a credibility, even though if you had asked to a driver, to an engineer, to a principal on the grid, everybody probably rates him because of the fact that his superpower is longevity. Now, unfortunately, the longevity didn't necessarily bring the results that we want, but so much of Formula One is also these sliding door moments, because as I was kind of doing the research for this, I did not realize that at one point he was up for a Ferrari seat that ultimately went to someone else. But that would have definitely, at least in my mind, impacted the weight that he would have had to go through to pick up that podium.
Big time. And like, yeah, the people forget, or it's like, Hulk's been kind of like a journeyman F1 driver as of the last like 6-7 years. But before that, like a 2012, 2013 Hulk, he was like a hot item back then. Like, he was super renowned, like super rated by the paddock. So
yeah, he also won Le Mans in 2015, I think, because it was a Porsche 919 Porsche came out, and he and Earl Bamber and I forget the other driver, but you know, like, it's a huge, like, it's saying a lot that you're gonna take like Porsche's pinnacle car. I'm pretty sure that was the first year of the 919 race car, and I mean, we went to Texas for UC for WEC that year to see that car in person, because I wasn't sure if I was gonna get to see it, you know, if it was going to make its way to Monterey in any way. But like, that was such a big deal for sports car racing. So like, you know, it's crazy to think like he's had like the pinnacle on one side, winning Le Mans, and still fighting to get that, you know, like even after the cool off period of Formula One, right? Like you're saying, where he's, you know, he's got those 3 or 4 years where he is like a hot commodity, and then he's got to like basically work his way back up through the field, in a sense, in all ways, to even get to the podium.
I mean, I'm going through it. Not only that, to your point, Nick, 24 hours of Le Mans, it was a 1-1. Like, he never had to do it again because he won it on his first race. He also won Formula 2. It was known as GP2 at the time, but I guess he won a comprehensive title way back when. And the amount of cosmic kismet, if there's one driver aesthetically that looks like Brad Pitt, aka Sonny Hayes, it would probably be Nico Hülkenberg. So I'm glad that and we probably need to do the Formula One episode, because I'm sure both of you have takes, whether you've seen it or not. But I thought it was really apropos that for a lot of people's first races coming off that movie, they got a Hollywood ending and Nico winning, not winning, but it feels like winning, but getting a podium.
Yeah, it definitely feels very cinematic.
If I don't know, I just thought of this, but like, I definitely saw that meme that everyone's seen about like, the guy getting the medal and popping the champagne, and then it zooms out and he's in third place. Like, he's like, fuck everybody, like, whatever. It felt very much like that moment, but like in a good way. Like, it wasn't like a asshole celebrating third place. It was like, yes, like everybody was celebrating that third place that hard.
No, and it's always something that whenever you do watch the end of Formula One races, I am a big fan of body language and watching people. And it's always interesting to see how the champagne gets allocated as it's sprayed across the three podium winners, as well as the team principal or whatever representative of the team represents the constructor. And yeah, to a person, I'm sure Nico got the most Gatorade baths of champagne baths that we've ever seen. Because I don't think a single...
He was a little disappointed in that. I felt like because there was the whole drama with the penalty and stuff with McLaren, which maybe we'll talk about later, I kind of felt like they were a little awkward, Oscar and Lando, just because of what was going on with that thing. So they kind of like sprayed each other, and Nico was kind of over on his own for like a good while, just like celebrating, spraying. They should have just like, it all should have been about him.
Yeah.
Damn you.
Just, seriously. Yeah, they didn't
kids these days.
Immediately. I know that they came around and like congratulated him, whatever, but like, I feel like that should have been just a whole all about him moment.
I mean, there were so many moments like that where it was just like, this is new. Like when they go into the briefing room or whatever and he like forgets his helmet. Like you could just tell, like, it's like you've never been there. And like, the funny thing is, like, as a society, we, you know, I don't want to say we look down on that, but like, you know, the act like you've been there kind of attitude seems to be pretty prominent in most things that we do as human beings. Like, fuck that, man. Like, be awkward as hell. Just enjoy the shit. Like, do all the things wrong. Like, as long as you don't get disqualified by not, like, what do I do with my hands? Yeah. But like, it was so cool to see all those moments, you know, kind of like, you know, just awkwardness is not in a negative way, but whatever awkwardness is in a more endearing way, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
show that here.
Character. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. I agree. All right. So speaking let's of body about, language.
Let's talk about the number five hot take that AI gave me.
Oh, God.
Red Bull will have their worst season in 5 years. Max Verstappen being the reigning champion means nothing if the car development has stalled. They'll finish outside of the top three in the Constructors' Championship, marking the end of their recent dominance era, which is a perfect segue into Red Bull and it falling to tatters. Take it away.
Is that even a hot take?
Not really.
Like, that seems more like a news article from
the AP. No, it's this, right? We have known probably for about 2 years that, let's just say that there's been a shaky foundation in all things Red Bull, and we're not talking about Helmut Marko's belief in non-white people, but I think Todd has committed harakiri. Apologies, listen. Oh, there he is. Sorry, he's back.
Yes, golf clap for that.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Every now and then, right?
I love no. me a racist horn or a joke.
Yep. That man has definitely not done anything for race relations in the modern era, but I will try to wrangle this back in. But in a way, Red Bull seemed content to make the deal with the devil, which is we are going to be the team that is going to single-handedly win the Constructors with one driver. And when it worked, it worked. Max probably had his most arguably dominant season. But then, the last 2 years in particular, like, you see the monkey paw curling in real time. First, you've undermined your second driver. Then you've made a car so bad that I'm pretty convinced that if it's not Max Verstappen, I think it's the worst car on the grid, and I don't think it would score a single point without him. And that's where we kind of are. Now, the question I have to both of you, because we are not going to bury the lead anymore. Christian Horner's not with Red Bull at all. The chicken and egg question I have for the both of you is this. Is this Red Bull's attempt to say, baby, I've changed, come back to us, Max? Or was this the fact that they already know that Max is on his way somewhere else and let's just blow this up completely and reboot from scratch?
It has to be a move to keep Max.
Has to be.
It has 1,000%.
Yeah.
Why? Like we always talk about, like, in other sports, rebuilding eras or whatever, like teams going through a rebuild. It doesn't work the same in F1, at least to me. If they were going to lose Max and they knew they were going to lose Max, then Horner stays and they work on turning the Red Bull into a car that can work amongst all drivers, like not so tailored to his skill set. I think the public beef with Joss and Horner's control of the team has been, like you said, it's been ongoing for a couple of years, or it's been really highlighted for a couple of years since what's his name died, the guy that owned Red Bull.
What's his name? Helmut Marko Mach 1?
No. It's Mintzlaff is his last name. It's Oliver Mintzlaff, the son. I can't remember the
Otto?
Dad's name. Father Mintzlaff, whatever.
Yeah. Papa.
Faja. But like that's been a known beef since he died, like with Joss Verstappen and Christian Horner and the control that Horner had over the team and the ongoings there. I think it has to be a move to keep Max. He says either Christian's out and we run the team the way Verstappen's want to run the team, or it's like LeBron on the Lakers. Like, you don't really need a coach. Like, you just let him, you know, take care of the day-to-day stuff, and like Max will make the Verstappen's, I guess, will make the decision.
But I do think this. I think the biggest advantage Christian Horner gave Red Bull and essentially Max was he gave him another meat shield, because for all of Max's douchebaggery on the track, and let's not mince words, he was often a very frustrating driver to watch, especially if you weren't rooting for him. Horner always gave him a layer of insulation, because he would always try to, yeah, but, or if nothing else, take some of the distraction away from Max. And people began to hate Christian Horner as much as they began to hate Max Verstappen. And that's kind of what made modern day Red Bull the biggest and best villains in the sport. Because the fact that no matter how egregious or how outrageous the action on the track was, you would always find a way for Christian Horner to weasel his way out of it, or try to talk to it, or try to deflect to something completely different. And I think that probably helped Max become a superhero in his own right in the longest way, because Horner always gave him that grace of saying, I'll take this on while you continue to find yourself on the track. He is not going to have that wherever he goes, whether it be at Red Bull or if he goes to Mercedes. Well, he may get that from Toto. But anyway, I just think Horner was as essential to Max reaching that level of Thanos-ness that we've often attributed him to as much as Max was.
I agree. I think, you know, Christian Horner's like he's top five, you know, team principal of all time, in my opinion, if not maybe even debatably higher. Right. Like you basically got Ron Dennis and Senna. That era is the, you know, probably Ron Dennis would be top five for everybody. Toto is probably top five for most people. And then you can kind of talk about, like, you could look at stats, even, I don't know stats wise, but like Christian Horner has what, six driver titles and seven or eight?
No, he has eight driver's titles and six team constructors championships.
Yeah, like even statistically, he's got to be in the conversation for a top, you know, let's say three, top five, probably. Top 10. Yeah, like wherever he lands in that, like there's no denying his skill and like, you know, what he brings to any team if he chooses to go to another team next. I think what's interesting is like what is not spoken about is exactly what you're saying, Rohit. He's equally PR. You know, he's like kind of the shield, or, you know, the spin, or however you want to like look at that. And I think it speaks to the, I forget the PR guy's name from Red Bull who also got let go. You know, like those are equally a part of a team, right? And I think you can have a great driver, but like you do not want Jos Verstappen and Helmut Marko as the face of Red Bull. Well, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe at this time in the world history, Nazis are going to run everything. You know, like maybe they are the right people for that choice. Maybe that's the fan base. But like, it sucks because like you're going to have those people, right? Like, and you're going to have people that do really good at that. And I think, you know, the result is, yes, winning on the track. And that's what, you know, the performance that we need out of a car, blah, blah, blah. But like, if a team is successful, you need to have those people that know when to step in, know when, you know, that's just good leadership in like humanity, right? And I think that's something that Christian Horner, I'm super critical of him. I think he's a jerk, but I do know why he does what he's done. I know exactly how he played. I can see him playing up all of those things within Drive to Survive. Like, look, the Red Bull brand, with or without Max, is exponentially better in the last, you know, in this like kind of, you know, I don't know, Drive to Survive era because of Christian Horner. Obviously, it helps that Max is winning, but like, I don't see that being a thing, right? Like, where do you go from here? And I'm always thinking about like marketing on it just got super loud, Todd.
And
yeah, but basically what I was thinking is like, if Christian Horner goes to another team and, you know, like starts from the bottom again, let's say, like this is the most likely story, in my opinion. He goes to, it's hard to say where, because he has, you know, if former colleagues everywhere, right? He has what was the guy that, even with going back to the Nico Hülkenberg, like the team principal over there is a Red Bull guy, right? And then Adrian Newey's at Aston Martin, like the, you know, he's been in the sport and so successful that he's, I don't want to say he's like groomed, but he's brought so many people up in Red Bull that Red Bull's like, you know, blood runs through all the teams in a good way.
In America, we use the term coaching tree, right? He's got a forest.
Yep.
He's got a practical forest. And if you had to ask me, I think he's going to go to Aston Martin, because I think similar to, and my hypothesis is, I think I'm of the opposite opinion of you two. Whereas I think Max is gone. Helmut Marko is reading the tea leaves. And he's like, you know what? Now is the time to push the reset button, because we've lost Max. Why not lose Horner? Because now we can truly make it about me. Because ultimately, what we've always asked about Red Bull is it, what's the pie chart look like in terms of success? And in each one of these three individuals' minds, that being Marco, that being Verstappen, that being Horner, they all think they're the overwhelming majority of reason why we talked about modern day Red Bull as a dynasty. And I think, unfortunately, the victor gets to write the remains of the news. And by ousting at least Horner, and speculative by me that they're also watching Verstappen go, Marco can now say, this is my team. It's always been my team. I was the true architect of this. Let me see if I can do it now for a third time. Now, that being said, this third time would not have the principle that he had for the first two, right? Because Horner was also there for the Vettel era. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep. 20 years.
20 years. And that's the thing where now I think, if you ask me, I would say that ultimately, I am of the opinion Christian Horner was the most successful component of that Red Bull troika, if you will.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a huge piece to that puzzle. I do agree that with you that I think they're just going to blow up the team. I personally think that Max is already gone. I think Max has already signed with Mercedes, and George Russell's out of a seat. They're going to keep Kimi. They'll have arguably the best driver in Max and one of the, you know, future best drivers with Kimi, and they restart with Toto at the helm. You know, I think with the idea of going to Aston Martin, the one thing I would push back on your theory there, the idea of, you know, dealing with Max and his dad and then going to Aston Martin and having to deal with, you know,
but this is
Lance
where
and Lawrence.
Yeah, I see your point, but this is also where I think we're going to see Lance leave this year, because there's just something about how he's been operating the last couple of races. It seems like either his heart is not in it, or he himself now acknowledges that, like, maybe I've been here a little too long. I think we're going to see, at least, and this is, I guess, my hot take of the episode, next year, Red Bull and Aston Martin are going to be completely different as we know them today, meaning we will see at least one to two new drivers on both teams, if not one. And I think we're going to see a new principal.
So do you think Alonso sticks around at Aston Martin?
I could see Alonso sticking around, because the other thing we've always talked about with regards to Aston Martin is ownership, in terms of they're the team that seems to want to sell itself more than any other on the grid. And as much as any new prospective buyer would like to see a blank check in terms of both driver seats open, both principals open, so then they can instill whatever it is they want, I think Alonso is as nice of a dangling carrot as you could offer many a buyership group.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think it has been interesting to watch Lance. You know, there's like the hand injury, but it just seems like the car is more capable than the effort this year, more than it has been in the past few years. I don't know. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, Horner goes to Aston. I mean, the thing is, like, outside of the obvious, you know, Ferrari is kind of a no, because you have Lewis and what's his name? I'm drawing a blank.
Charles
right now.
Leclerc and Fred Vasseur.
Fred Vasseur. Yeah, like Lewis has a relationship there. You look at, like, you know, Adrian Newey at Aston Martin is kind of interesting. Maybe, you know, I don't know what the relationship between, you know, Adrian Newey and Christian Horner is at this point, but, like, obviously they had a lot of success at Red Bull. So maybe there's opportunity there. You know, Alpine obviously is like kind of always in search of, you know,
guidance.
Yeah, leadership, guidance. You know, Haas isn't going to change. He's not going to Haas. That just doesn't make any sense. He's not going to go to Williams. Williams is kind of, I mean, he could go to Williams, but
he could go to Sauber.
Well, and Sauber.
No, I'm joking.
But he could, right? But then he has his other, the team principal at Sauber right now is a former Christian Horner employee, cycle. Right? So, yeah. So you kind of have like these like oddities mixed in throughout the grid of where he could actually go. And obviously he's not going to, you know, McLaren or Mercedes. So like there's only a few choices for him, but I would say that most of the teams on the grid would gladly have him at the helm, even if that meant replacing somebody else.
So just to bring the listener and Todd up to speed, Todd, we were talking about the fact that if we saw Horner leave a team, where would he end up?
He's not. So that's what I
So that's what's weird to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm not sure what's going to happen. He's still on the payroll, and he said that a couple of times now. He's still employed by the team. He just has no operational control. I think that's their way of kind of doing gardening leave, but I also don't see him going anywhere else on the grid immediately. And you kind of mentioned earlier Aston Martin. I think the reason that wouldn't work is because I think Newey wanted to get away from Horner, and that's why he left.
You think Horner was the reason why Newey left?
Yeah, I think Newey said kind of publicly that, or not publicly, but on the semi-publicly, that he was like trying to get out of that situation, and that included getting away from Horner.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's a thing that I have the biggest question on. I think like Aston Martin makes a lot of sense, but was it the relationship with Horner and Newey, or was it the relationship with Newey and Jos Verstappen? You know, like there's a lot of potential reasons why you would leave Red Bull, right? But yeah, man, it's crazy to think about what the future for Red Bull even looks like, right? Because let's say this is a hard reset. You know, they deal with Horner first. It's weird that they are doing it right now. Obviously, there was some heated conversation. You know, like, I don't know if you guys watched Kim Illman's recent video, but like, you know, there's a lot, there's like heated conversation between Jos Verstappen and the PR guy, who is very publicly known as like, you know, a respected person in the paddock. And then Horner got involved. And then since that conversation, it's basically been downhill. And then we get the announcement. I was, you know, like I could be on the fence to whether this is good or bad for both Red Bull or for you know, F1 in general. But I think seeing all of the people within the Red Bull organization cheering him, the emotional responses from so many people, you know, there's definitely a lot of people that like genuinely, you know, care about him and appreciate what he's done in his time at Red Bull. And I think getting rid of him now and getting rid of, I forget the PR guy's name, and I'll find it. Remember.
By the way, Todd, owner of Red Bull, was one Dieter
Mateschitz.
I already went once this morning, but maybe later.
But by letting go of Horner and, you know, like now, then they can say, oh, well, you know, we tried to solve the problem for Max. You know, it's kind of like it could be just a show.
Max is already on his way out.
And, you know, it sucks for Horner to be the guy that gets let go. But like to Rowett's point, if you're looking to reset, we all know that Helmut Marko really drives the decisions there anyway.
Well done.
I mean, but yeah, it's just, yeah. It's
but
just,
like Helmut does have a lot of input as far as the drivers go. But as far as the team goes, the technical direction, the bringing those people in, that was like Horner's doing for the last 20 years. Like, this team was his. Like, we always joke about Helmut. Like, as far as I understand it, and then, like, I know you were talking about that earlier, Ro. When it comes to drivers and the development academy and that stuff, that was Dr. Evil. But as far as the building the team, that was Horner's and has been since they bought that team from Jaguar. It doesn't make any sense to me to do this unless this is a guarantee to keep Max. Or at least keep Max through the contract.
When is the contract? Remind the listeners.
28 or 29, I think.
Okay. See, I'm still of the opinion, I think they know Max is gone, and this is Helmut Marko kind of claiming his victory lap, so to speak, and saying, hey, I'm the reason behind the success. I'm going to rebuild this team now for the third time. And the question now I have to you, Todd, is, okay, if you can indulge me, let's say Max is gone. Who is the driver that they are going to attract? Because in my mind, obviously, I think it would be George. But I feel that the other Mercedes driver is more fitting Helmut Marko's race profile. Not, I guess, genetically, but in terms of a driver. And I think they would have much rather go after Antonelli, because he at least comes up as a talented young driver, which if there's one thing you ask Red Bull internally, what they do better than anything is groom these drivers, so to speak.
Groom's a strong word.
So the other thing that we should bring up, I had to look it up, but like Max has that clause in his contract that basically says if he's not a top three driver by summer break in 2025, he has
exit
the right
clause,
to cancel
yeah.
his contract. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that all of these things are tied together, whether it's presented that way or not. Like, it only makes sense because of that clause, right? There's, to your point, Todd, like, Horner's put together the team, brought in the right people, you know, like generally speaking, I think like, you know, yes, they've let's say struggled in the last couple of years, but that's only because you have won, you know, so many times in the last 5 years. Prior to Max winning, the team was midfield, you know, most of the time. And, you know, then you have the Vettel era where like you're winning, but like all of that is more proof of Christian Horner's ability to take a team from, you know, like you said, when they acquired the team from Jaguar to getting to Vettel winning, that's a huge success story, right? And then you get to do it again, and like you have this, you know, tremendous, like hard, almost hard reset, I guess, but with Horner still at the helm. And then you get to the point where Max is winning. It feels like, you know, you're kind of in another one of those 8 year windows that seem to always happen in Formula One, where like it's just a giant shift and like McLaren will be dominant for a few years in whatever way. And, you know, Red Bull, unfortunately, I think like is going to have the biggest uphill battle even with Max, right? Because what you always talk about, Todd, is like the car being set up for Max basically screws every other driver. Like Yuki is so much better in a V carb. You know, every other driver who's been in the Red Bull, you know, seat, like Checo Perez was, you know, winning races for a couple of years. And like, it just went further and further towards Max in those, you know, that 2 year period. And then he's gone because, you know, aside from racism, he's, you know, gone because he wasn't winning. But like, he should still be in Formula One. If he can be as successful in another car, it's kind of crazy to me that he's not in Formula One.
It's crazy to think that he was the best out of all of the teammates Max has killed. He was the best amongst all of them.
Who do we have? Danny Rick, Albon,
Gasly, Liam Lawson,
Kvyat,
Checo.
Liam Lawson, yeah.
Didn't Sainz also at one point compete against him when they were in Toro Rosso?
Well, yeah, but just since Red Bull, I think it was.
Since Red Bull, yeah. I think.
That's it.
So five drivers, basically, that like, you know, and Checo is unquestionably the best out of those five performance-wise during his time at Red Bull, right? Like, I don't think
I would say against that. Danny Rick, because they were still neck and neck for the first 2 years. I think Danny Rick's like resume was a bit tarnished because of his post-Red Bull thing. But when he was on Red Bull, that was when Danny Rick was the last of the late breakers and had all this like hype around him, whatever. He was winning races, but Max was still on the come up. Who knows what he would do against him now. I don't think, to answer your question earlier, Ro, I don't think that they would go after a big name now. I think if they're going to do a reset and they know they're losing Max and they lost Horner, I think they do everything they can to get like Arvin Lindblad, I think is one of their junior drivers that has a lot of hype around him. They stick him in the team now because the car's going to suck. Let him develop with the car, right? And then keep Yuki there. Who cares? Or bring in a veteran like Bottas or God, who else? Maybe bring Checo back because the sponsorship dollars. Like,
I think this, if Max is gone, I think it only makes sense that whether they want to call it this or not, it's going to be a swap with him and George Russell, because I don't see George Russell going anywhere on the grid if he's now out of a seat as well. So that's where I think, even if Red Bull does this reboot, I would like them to get a younger driver like a Kimi. Mercedes is not going to let Kimi go. I acknowledge that. But I do think realistically, if that's the hand that they're dealt, they're going to go after George. And I don't think George is the type to sit a year off the grid, especially when he's not even entering his prime.
Is George under contract?
No, that's why a lot of the speculation has been about this. George is out of a contract at the end of this year and still has not signed an extension. And Toto has said, like, kind of, it's my duty, you know, publicly, just the usual, it's my duty to talk to all drivers on the grid. Obviously, we're talking to George. We want to keep George, blah, blah, blah. But, like, yeah, conversations are being had with everybody like it always has.
I mean, if you're Toto, do you even bother? Like, it sounds fucked up, but like, do you even bother with George at this point? Like, Kimi Antonelli is, you know, I would say a very close second at Mercedes. And if you know that Max is unhappy, I feel like you're like, it's your duty to just put all the eggs and get Max here as a team principal almost.
But I don't know. It just feels like granted, he is the best driver probably in the last 20 years or whatever, right? Like, you 1A, 1B with Lewis, or 1A, 1B, 1C with Schumacher if you go back that far, right? Like,
yeah.
But I feel like he's the type of person that's just at some point soon going to get bored with it and just be like, all right, I'm going to go do WEC just because, like, that's my passion anyway. Like, he doesn't feel like – I know he's so young and he could race for the next 15 years, but he already is feeling like I'm a dad now. This is just me speculating, but like he's like got the baby now. He's gonna change mentally, I think, in the next couple of years, where he's just gonna be like, I want to go do some other racing series that isn't 11 and a half months a year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I feel like he's too competitive for that. I feel like, yeah, you know, you can scratch the competitive itch by, you know, sim racing or going to another, you know, style of racing or whatever. But ultimately, right now, you are not the best Formula One driver of all time. You arguably are and should be at some point considered that, but you're not right now. Like, no matter what, you don't have the trophies to prove that you're the best of all time, which I think that and his dad probably speaking that into his ear every morning when he wakes up, whispering those sweet "you're nothings."
Leave you at a gas station again.
Yeah, exactly.
And your daughter, I mean, too.
Like that. I think that's where, like, you know, there's obviously like a lot of different styles of, you know, people that race in all aspects of racing, but in Formula One, you know, like the Vettel walking away, the Lewis being the champion for you know, so many other things, and, you know, standing up for so many different things, they're the anomalies. Most people that race Formula One just want to race and win, and I think Max is that type of person. I don't think any other form of racing would be fulfilling for him, because it's not going to be, it's not as world renowned as Formula One. You know, like, WEC is awesome. Sports car racing to me is far superior to Formula One, because you've got to deal with so many different things and different, you know, aspects of racing and driving in particular. But like, Formula One is the crowning achievement of like racing, you know. And if he would have been like 2 years, like, let's say he, in my mind, if I'm Max and I have his mentality, I have the questionable win against Lewis, and then I have the year that I come back and kick everybody's ass and prove that I'm the best. And that's when I walk away from Formula One. If I believe what you're saying, Todd, if I feel like I've already done this, I'm bored with it, because that's your, like, that's your exclamation point on people questioning whether you beat Lewis, right? You come back and you just annihilate everybody, essentially. Now it's kind of like, well, you've got what, four titles?
But he's been winning up until now. When he goes through this next year and a half, 2 years of completely changing the car over, whatever, apparently the word on the street is that the power unit that Red Bull has been developing is kind of like an Alpine situation where it's not as strong. If he goes through this next couple of years of not winning, like, is he really going to want to wait that 8-year cycle to get back to the top? Fernando has been chasing that since his first two titles, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't see Max being a Fernando type where he's just like, I want the pinnacle of the, like, I want to be the top of the top. I think Max owns his own WEC team, right? Like, he easily would just say, like, all right, I'm just going to go do this because, like, I just love racing. When he's sim racing at home, he doesn't race Formula One. He races sports cars. So, I don't know. That's where I'm at with it. Bro, any closing thoughts about Max?
Guys,
where's Horner go?
I think if Horner, first of all, if I'm Sky or if I am Apple, because that's the other thing we kind of have to talk about, isn't Apple about to take the Formula One rights pretty soon? Like, that is your new North Star. Because if Apple is serious about wanting to be the broadcaster, make him the voice. And we always use the analogy that, hey, Danny Rick should be the John Madden of the sport. Make him Pat Summerall, if that's the case, because you're going to need that type of charismatic persona on your presentation to really get new fans, but more importantly, aggravate the old fans, because that's how we know personalities last in the sport. The other reason why I may be distracted is I've gone down a rabbit hole in Copilot in hopes of building a amazing title or cover page for this episode's work. And yeah, Nick, I've got some things for you.
Okay, so I'm a little distracted because I had to look up the WEC thing, and apparently a month ago, according to Reddit, both Max and Jos Verstappen requested FIA license for WEC, basically. So
why do you think he was testing at Nürburgring under Franz Hermann? He's going to WEC.
Mexico.
He's going to go somewhere. All right. If this is true and all the rumors are true and he goes to Mercedes, he'll give Mercedes a 2 or 3 year stint. Apparently their engine's really good. Things are looking good for 26. He goes, gives it a 2 or 3 year stint. We see a battle between Mercedes and McLaren for the next few years. Seems like whatever. But past that, Max is going to walk away before he needs to, basically.
So what does Formula One do? What does the FIA do? Like, if I'm watching, you know, let's just say the greatest driver of all time walk away from the sport, do I make up a story about his gambling addiction, or do I? Oh wait, that's
allegedly.
That's NBA. Allegedly. Sorry. No, like seriously, like if Max wants to race sports cars, sports car racing is obviously. And maybe he doesn't want to race full seasons in sports car. Maybe it's just Le Mans. You know, like if he just wants to
win a 24. Or just do the big three, right? Like Daytona.
Or do the big three. Do you adjust your schedule accordingly to keep him in Formula One? Not to say that's even going to be appealing to him. If you're saying like he just wants to be a stay-at-home dad and sim race. Like, you know, I respect that more than I respect him choosing to race every weekend of the year. But if you're Formula One, I got to think you're like worried about this, right?
I don't think they care. They still have Lewis. They still have Fernando. They still have global stars. Max, again, like you said, is in the conversation for one of the greatest ever. But we had Vettel, and he kind of faded into obscurity over the next 8 years or whatever since he left Red Bull. Went to Ferrari, had a couple of good years, okay years. But Ferrari was in turmoil then. And then he went to Aston and just kind of faded into obscurity. Like, there's always the next man up for Formula One.
There's always the next man up, but I also think now, the more and more we're removed from Vettel leaving the sport, I think he took this approach that he did all he needed to, which is he got his own era. What else is there for him in terms of, like, okay, maybe he gets one more championship, but he is firmly entrenched in what I would probably consider a Tim Duncan-like zone of he was an all-time great. Depending on who you are, he may be the best driver you've seen, and he's perfectly okay with that. Max does not seem to have that amount of mental health or sanity to be okay with that. We keep saying, oh, he's going to go be a parent. We keep saying he might do e-racing or he may do WEC. I don't think so. I think he is a maniac in the best way, and I think that's why I find it very hard that he's just going to leave the sport because he didn't get his way one time.
I don't think it's about getting his way, though. I think it's he just wants to be in just racing. He just wants to race something and be competitive. I don't think that he will have the patience, I would say, for, like, I think he'd be fine going to a lower class in WEC and owning his own team and just doing that and being competitive there. Like, and it's still racing. He still has a chance to win. That racing series has a lot more parity in it anyway. I just don't think he's got that, like, just the way he's given vibes since his first championship, like, he just is like, I'm, like, just here to race. I just want to race. Like, I don't want all the other bullshit. Like, did you see his face when the whole contract talks were talking, or when they were kept talking about the contract stuff in pre-Silverstone? That one where he's like, did you see the picture where he's sitting at, like, a hospitality table and there's, like, 70 reporters around him? The look on his face is just like, oh, my God, I hate this so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I just feel like once you taste winning at that level, I can only imagine that it's got to be a driving factor in all your choices. But I also don't have kids, so maybe I'm on the wrong side of this whole conversation.
Trust me, they ruin your life.
You're my podcasting uncle.
Also, this is something that was, I just saw, I think it was yesterday, Nelson Piquet Jr. was on some podcast and said,
oh God.
No, he didn't drop any hard R's or anything. He said something already about how next season Max would be at Mercedes. Like, it leaked. Like, he had inside knowledge that it was already a done deal, basically. So, like, it very well could be, but, like I said, he gives Mercedes a couple of years and then he moves on.
Yeah. Final note, how sadistic do you have to be a Formula One engineer or mechanic? Because watching Silverstone and listening to Max just belittle the car, even though he was in like fifth at the time, I think.
Like Lance also.
Oh yeah, Lance too. Yeah. I mean, I just don't understand how you work in that condition. Like, you're arguably one of the most intelligent, talented mechanics, engineers, whatever, in the world, if you got that job. And every weekend you have to listen to somebody for 2 hours just tell you how shit the car is and how this is undrivable while they drive potentially to a podium or very close to a podium finish. Like, it's wild to me. Like, it just was like really poignant in watching Silverstone this time.
Yeah, dude. You got to have thick skin. And it's not necessarily like the engineers at Red Bull specifically have been chasing the dragon about the speed. They make this car theoretically super fast. Or if you think back to the zero pod era of Mercedes, like everything they designed is like, holy shit, this is a light bulb moment. And then you get the car on track and it just doesn't work with the driver or doesn't work with the track or doesn't work with the conditions. And it's just like, well, shit. And then you get the driver, yeah, shitting on it on top of that.
Here's the thing. We expect this from Max. Like, at this point, I'm sure they've kind of become as immune to it as you can be, because if that's the stock treatment, what do they care? But the likes of freaking Lance Stroll, who was arguably having the race of his season, and then he still got them points, is probably the best thing Aston Martin's done all year, and he goes on that. That's where I would be a little more upset. I would probably take a big old wrench and chuck it at Lance's head.
He's got a punchable face anyway, though, so.
Now he's got a socket to his eye socket.
It only took us an hour, but we got to the Lance Stroll bashing people.
You're welcome, Trev.
Yeah.
I have to ask before we go, I know we're at time, but we just like glossed over the entire race, or, well, we haven't recorded in five races, but the last race, was the penalty on Oscar justified? Too much, too little? Like, what are we... The 10-second penalty for braking and having Max overtake him before that safety car restart?
I think the penalty was justified. I think 10 seconds was a little bit harsh.
I think this is very much in the realm of, no, Michael, it's not fair. It's not fair. If that was any other team, I think this is something that they've drummed up to cause a little bit more tension in the race. Because other than that, I think this is still Oscar's title to lose.
I agree. Because I think what was the stats that came out around it, right? Like, it was like...
He did like double the 100 mile braking pressure.
Yeah, double the braking pressure. So like, you know, obviously when you're in the car and you're seeing cars coming and you're trying to not hit the, you know, you're trying to play the game, but you're also, you know, trying to not run in, you know, like run into the you know, pace car. Yeah, like I don't think it matters though, right? Like I think Lando still wins even if the penalty is 5 seconds. Like, it might have been closer, but I think that, you know, the penalty in itself, it was justified. Like, it seemed crazy watching it on TV. It seemed way worse than what they played it down to be. You know, look, it was Max who was right there. So, you know, Max is, like, probably the most aggressive of all the drivers on the grid. Like, so there's an element of Max being a little too aggressive, maybe. Yes, but, like, Oscar still... I feel like it was just too much braking.
Yeah.
Cause you like, that was the one thing about like Nico Hülkenberg. Like, he even said, oh yeah, way back down the line.
The Constantino effect. Thought, he almost ran into somebody as well. Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah, I agree. I think it should have been 5 seconds though. I think 10 was too harsh, but I understand that they're trying to set a precedent or whatever. And apparently on the restart before that, he did the same thing and the stewards let it go. So he could have had 20 seconds and not even been on the podium. Yeah.
Or maybe they gave him 2 5-second penalties.
Yeah.
Yep, man. All right, well, what do we got? We got a couple of weeks until the next race, right?
I believe, yep.
Maybe we'll come back with our AI hot takes next week.
We might have a hot takes episode for you in the next week or so.
All done by our AI overlords. And you know what? I'm going to commit to this on air. I will try to come up with the cover title in live radio time or podcasting time. So then by the time we are done recording, Nick, you have it in your inbox already and you can make the choice.
Yeah, actually, what we should do for our hot takes episode is each of us should choose a different AI to create the hot takes, and then we'll bring in our own hot takes. So we'll have a whole series of just BS computer AI hot takes, and then we'll have our own actual human hot takes that you'll have to care about. And then if anybody wants to bring their own hot takes, they can just leave us a comment or join us in the Discord.
Better yet, we could have Todd try to distinguish whose hot take is it. AI, Papa Bear, Mama Bear. Yes. I'm Mama Bear.
I like that idea. I like that idea.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, y'all. Well, thanks for listening to us and rocking with us. We appreciate you sticking around, even though we've been on a multi summer vacation.
Multi 21.
Summer break. I was going to say, we took a whole Formula One season from like the 1960s off.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Give us a follow, Exhaust Notes FM, on all the platforms, or join us in the Discord. We'll catch you in the next one. Peace.
Peace.